This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, Advantage Health Plan. 877-217-5757 is your number. And talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. Hiller Moore III, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, is with us. Born in New Orleans, year of 1954. His father, of course, was one of the most prominent business people in the state of Louisiana. And Hiller graduated from Brother Martin, came to LSU, and he's been a fixture in our community in one way or the other ever since, and has spent a life in law enforcement. And he is here to talk about what's going on. And it's been a tough year for our city, for our country, for that matter. And amid all the problems we're having on the streets, we are battling a pandemic, and Hiller Moore was affected in that way, too. He is a COVID survivor, and glad you're hale and hearty. But I'm sure anytime you get that diagnosis, it has to be a sobering moment.
I was more disappointed that I had to stay home and wasn't able to go to work, but because my symptoms were really not that bad. I had a cough and ran a fever for really 2 hours and was tested and was positive, so stayed home and learned to work from home, and employees wanted me back because I had too many emails because I was at home, wasn't able to move around much.
You got back quickly. Were you taking Regeneron?
No, I didn't drink bleach or anything. I just drank a lot of water.
And your brother recovered too, right?
He did. Yeah. Next door neighbor, he had it a lot worse than I did.
And as we know, some people have fared very poorly and others have succumbed to this. The latest among Louisiana luminaries, Pro Football Hall of Famer Fred Dean, 68 years old. So it can take out the mighty.
It's real.
It's real. It's real. And it's affected, of course, commerce. And anytime people are in dire straits, it's inevitable that crime will spike. And we've seen violent crime go way up. Can you attribute one to the other? Is there a correlation?
I don't think there's any doubt that it's a correlation. And it's just not me saying it. Everyone around the nation that kind of has followed crime for a long time, they've all seen the same thing. You can also imagine that a lot of the crime-fighting things that we normally would do, we just can't do them because of COVID. So that's pretty much kept us away from the practices, the best things that work. A lot of research, a lot of studies on that so far. And as you remember, in 2017, after the flood, we experienced the same similar spike, and it's the same now.
But this is record territory, a record we don't want, a dubious one. But are we already at a record number of homicides for the parish for a year?
So in 2017, our biggest year was 103 actual uniform crime report homicides.
3 years ago.
Correct. We're now at around 91 or 92. So we still have 70 days or whatever days to go. And unfortunately, you would think November and December would be smaller, slower months because of the cold and holidays, but I think last year it was 10 and 12 homicides for November and December. So we're staring at some bad numbers. Hopefully things will change. But it's to the people that are listening, the men and women in the law enforcement, and they're working hard, and it's nothing that they are doing or not doing that's causing this. This is just one of those things that happen.
Well, there's been talk of restoring the BRAVE program. Is that something that would help, or is it uncertain?
Well, we have the TRUCE program, which is similar to BRAVE. It's just it's just group violence reduction. But again, we're not able to do a lot of things we normally do because of COVID. And so, but yes, group violence reduction is a proven strategy that works, and we just need to get back to it once we can.
And amid the tragedy with COVID, an even bigger tragedy in our parish involving opioids, and this is one because of the COVID epidemic and other news stories, such as 91 homicides. We haven't talked about opioid deaths quite a lot, but there are more of those than there are homicides, I think.
It's an unbelievable number. It's one that people probably won't understand or accept at this point. But right now, Jim, I believe that we are at, as of a few days ago, 169 heroin, opioid-related, fentanyl-related overdose deaths.
And that's in this parish?
Only in Baton Rouge. But you have to add to that, there are 29 that are under review, that is, people that are died, they're waiting on blood results to come back. More than likely, those will be related to opioids, so that number has now grown, and we have, 2 or 3 months left to go. Last year, the total overdose deaths was 120. So now we're at 170 plus another additional 30, we're on record to potentially double last year's in a year. That's an outrageous number to look at.
877-217-5757 for Hill or Moore. And if you picked up your copy of The Advocate, and I hope people still do, it's a front page story. After an evening of late-night revelry, the stories of two LSU underclassmen took a tragic turn Monday, one hospitalized with alcohol intoxication. His fraternity, Phi Kappa Psi, has been suspended from chapter activities amid a criminal hazing investigation. The other student took her own life later that day, and her family and friends are searching for answers. The story from Leah Skeen and Andrea Gallo. We've been down this road too many times regarding fraternity hazing, and at LSU, the administration has clamped down, but it's a case in which obviously we still have bad incidents.
Yeah, it's culture. It's handed down from person to person, family to family, and it's one we really need to take a look at. I really think the only way to get a handle on hazing is to start in the high school. And that's before kids come to a college and have to educate them in high school. And parents have to be educated, particularly those who are former members, that things can happen. But we also don't want to forget that the overwhelming vast majority of fraternities and people that are in sororities are good people that are extremely bright, go on to do very good things. But these types of situations do occur, and we have to try to find a way to prevent them.
I would imagine when you came from LSU or to LSU from Brother Martin, a lot of your classmates, they joined fraternities.
No doubt.
You didn't.
No, I did not. I was not able to pay for a fraternity first. It was hard to pay for school, tuition, board, LSU football tickets, meals. Total was $666 a semester, and that was a stretch for the family to make.
And books.
It was, everything was included in 666, and it was a stretch.
Yeah, you were a few years ahead of me, but I had out-of-state tuition.
Wow.
And, I meal plan and room and board.
You probably got a scholarship.
I had a scholarship that covered part of it, but not all of it. And I remember I didn't have a bank account either, and I was lived in Little Rock. I didn't have a bank account in Louisiana. And I was carrying around a couple of $1,000s of cash for several months.
Wow.
And I wouldn't leave it in my dorm room. And I was going to these bars in Tigerland and thinking, my God, if I get mugged, I'm going to be in some big trouble. But speaking of Tigerland, what about that hot spot? When we were students, that was a happening place and largely uneventful as far as crime. But now it's become a cesspool of crime.
Yeah, again, there's really good people that live in Tigerland, and they want to be safe and want to have a good place to live. But we do have things that arise from time to time. And so we let data drive us where we go and what we do. And we first started, as you recall, filing a lawsuit against one particular unit that had 14 different apartments in it. And there were close to 400 calls for service there. There were three homicides at that location. And when we looked at it, we found the calls for service and did what we did. Since then, the owner has installed cameras, has moved cars that were there and taken ownership of it and done a better job. And then we had the latest domestic violence type related homicide at another location. And we looked at those calls for service and it was nearly 500 in 10 months. So we filed a letter with the organization. The lawyers have been very responsive, and they've sent a list yesterday of all of the items that they've done to try to correct the problem. So we're working on it one place at a time, and there are very many local owners of places there that are doing the right thing, and we're hoping that we can make it the best place in the world to live.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're a first caller for Hill or Moore. Good morning.
Hey, so I got a question, Hill or Moore, and I don't necessarily disagree with the approach you took, but I guess the Tigerland apartment owner, how can you declare him a nuisance? I mean, I guess my question is, how can he be blamed for a crime that he didn't commit? I mean, like if McDonald's sells a hamburger to a criminal, it's not their fault they sold the hamburger. But so I guess, how can you blame someone that's not really committing a crime for a crime?
Well, that's a really good question. The statute is pretty clear about what you're declaring. We're not finding him at fault. It's the complex. It's You know, who are you running to? What are you doing? Do you know that things are going on? Do you have proper security that's in place? Are you taking care of the residents, the issues that arise? And do you know what's going on your property? Are you calling the police and calling others to assist? And in that case, we had testimony and that the judge found it, it was a nuisance.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Hi, Gustavo. Good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm not exactly sure who your guest is, but and I don't know how much power he has or control, rather, maybe, on the area going into Tigerland from when you make a right turn from Nicholson onto Bull Pettit. But that is a disgraceful area. I mean, we have students from all over the country, all over the world, really, and when they go...
All right, Gustavo, if you hold on, we'll come back after the break. We're taking a 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing and Lauren Hickman doing some producing as well. So if you'd like to call, there's still time to get in with Hiller Moore, 877-217-5757. Later today, 2 o'clock, we'll hear from the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, his 55th monthly show right here on WRKF. Let's go back to Gustavo, who was talking about the perils of Tigerland. Gustavo, you were saying when you drive in to Bob Pettit Drive, great American, great LSU guy, but a street that's now treacherous. Why?
Well, you know, the whole appearance of that entrance, they put a new sign that is really pretty, but the median, the sidewalks, the road itself, it just looks dilapidated, like it's an abandoned area. And I know that's where the kids go have fun and enjoy, and probably they don't care about that. But other students from all over the country, all over the world, really come, and that's what they see. Does your guest have anything that he can help us do to improve the appearance of that area?
So, Gustavo, you're not wrong. You're absolutely right at the way that it looks. I've been there many times going through the area just to, you know, do what I'm doing. And I really don't know who has the ownership of that or the maintenance, but I will try to find that out. It's a good point. I do know that we've worked with the councilman and the state representatives about more lighting around that area because students do walk there from the campus to the bar areas there. And I'd like to see more lighting and more security cameras by the owners of the bars there.
Clayton on Essen. Hi, Clayton. You're on with Hiller Moore.
Good morning, Mr. Moore.
Hey, Clayton.
I'm Clayton. I'm the manager of Capital Cyclery on Essen Lane.
Hey, Clayton.
We have spoken a few times.
Yes.
I know you ride bikes. What is your take on bicycling safety and what can be done to increase just safe corridors around Baton Rouge? And what has your office done to help enforce the laws to protect cyclists?
Well, Jim indicated, having moved here from New Orleans and liking to bike, and I lived right off of Highland Road. And from when I started, and we're talking about 50 years now, there's always been a move or a talk to have bike lanes, especially all around LSU. And it's just never happened. And, I mean, being a bicyclist, I like to see more bike lanes. I know we've had some that have gone through the middle of the city. With regard to laws and enforcing laws, I can't remember ever really receiving any case summons or arrest or anything regarding cycling, so I'm not sure exactly of the case. But, Clayton, if I think I have your number, I can surely find you, maybe off the radio show. I can call to get some more information from you and to give you a better, clearer answer. So if you don't mind, I'd like to do that.
All right. Thank you, Clayton. 877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Hiller Moore. Jerry Cephas is next, the former Manship School Dean. We've had a lot of attention lately, and it's good that we are getting some attention about the homeless population in our city and a lot of panhandling, as we know, particularly at these intersections. And there are certain hot spots in Baton Rouge where that's going on. Richard Lipsey has taken charge and pointed out a few of those. Rieger Road, I think, is the area that he's most concerned about. But how significant is this issue?
It is significant. Rieger Road is for the volume of calls for service around Rieger Road, particularly the hotels, motels there, are just it's unreasonable to think that that's the number. This is a very difficult problem. Most of these people obviously are struggling, have mental health issues, have opioid related issues are often not from here, do not really readily want to accept help. And we've been trying to offer help. I know the mayor's office has a homeless program. We've been working with them along with Mr. Lipsy. So it's still in flux right now. Every city is seeing the same thing because of the pandemic. It's caused more issues for us. And it is a significant issue. We're trying to compile a list of all those that have been cited for panhandling and how can we reach out to help them so they would not return. But oftentimes, speaking to them, they do not want assistance and do not want out of the position they're in, but a lot of that could be attributed to their mental state.
A listener who's heard you a time or two on this show notes your love of baseball and the Yankees, and this is Tom on Bluebonnet saying he's got his advocate, and there's no story about the World Series game last night.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate that.
How about that?
Shout out
the
to
advocate,
the Yankees.
Come on, they can do better than that.
He knows much better than that. He's wearing his Red Sox hat, so that's okay.
Well, the Dodgers did beat the Tampa Bay Rays by a score of 8-3 last night in the opener.
A lot of pitching.
David in Shenandoah. David, you're on with Hiller Moore. Hi, David. Okay, Phil. That's Phil. We'll go to David and then go to Phil. David, you're on with Hiller. Hi.
Hey, good morning, Jim and Mr. Moore. I work in the benefits enrollment field, and I just wanted to share. I was in Biloxi, and they were doing a enrollment for the city of Biloxi, and they told us that I asked about the homeless population being there in Biloxi near the casinos and everything. They said that there were northern cities were busing the homeless folks down to these areas that had soup kitchens or charities in specific locations. And I didn't know if you had ever heard any rumors of that.
David, it's a good question. I heard of that 2 or 3 years ago where they were being bused from California to here. But the reason that I indicated earlier, we're making a list of those that are being picked up for different things and where they're from. Do they have a cell phone? Do they have a parent, a family member we can call? A lot of them are from here, but some are from other states, but I have not found hardly any from the northern states.
Thank you, David. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Hiller Moore.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. Mr. Moore, first of all, thank you. I just really impressed with your integrity and your honesty and your work. And my question is, for what can seniors do now as far as the COVID-19 situation? We're at home, and we've been tested once, and we're clear so far. So what's the next thing we can do to help?
That's a really good question. It's been asked many times, what can people do? You know, it's hard. The kids that we deal with, Jim, it's not one that I can have Phil talk to or see. And generally, those kids don't want to speak with someone like that. They want to speak with someone very young and has been through it before. So it's tough. But to me, the best that seniors, citizens can do are those that are now retired, reading to kids. But now you can't. If we wait to maybe read to children on Zoom, which is going to be very hard to do. But keep being active in the schools. I think the schools are where it all starts. I know we have an acting school superintendent now that I'm anxious to get to meet with again. He's a good man. But getting involved in the community, helping schools, particularly with reading, is important, but the COVID has really taken hold on that.
And we talked a little about baseball. You have become a big advocate of a guy who had his problems here, Tyrann Mathieu. We've heard the terrible stories about Darius Geis, but Mathieu is one who has gone the other way and doing very well.
Unbelievable young man. We obviously had our differences earlier on, and he left LSU early. This man, young man, has turned it around. He's an unbelievable father. He's a leader. He's a team leader. And he's now giving back to the community, particularly those that are highly at risk. He started a program with us called The Shift, where he's had to shift his own mind and his own thinking. And now he's on a call every 2 weeks with kids who are highly at risk that we do a Zoom call. And he personally speaks with these kids and has made a difference.
And the DA has handed me a booklet from the LSU Social Research and Evaluation Center about the judicial response to the opioid crisis. And the main thing about it is that it has ideas on how we address this. Is there any quick panacea, or is this a long, tough slog?
It's a long, tough slog. And hats off to Dr. Winchester and Dr. Rhodes at LSU and all their staff for that. I'd like for people to read that and see what the problems are and what the attack is. And the attack is not just simply arresting mm-hmm. people. It's services.
Well, Hiller Moore, we always enjoy hearing from you. By the way, another listener asks, why isn't Miller Hiller Moore out campaigning? Well, it's because he was elected without opposition. Yeah. He doesn't have the number of candidates the mayor does, but he was elected without opposition.
And I appreciate it.
And Gustavo apologizes. He says when he called in, he didn't know that it was you. He didn't hear the beginning of the show. He says, "I love Mr. Moore," in all caps. And Gustavo, believe me, is not a man who dispenses plaudits that willingly. So
thanks for having me,
Gustavo. And thanks, Hiller Moore. And we'll hear from Jerry Seppos when we return. Your number 877-217-5757. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and we're back after this pause for the news.